Good afternoon, and thank you very much for joining us here at Sun Sounds for the Tuesday, September 9th edition of the East Valley News. I'm J.W. Nicholas, your reader for the next half hour, and we'll be looking at some news from the past week in Chandler, Gilbert, and Sun Lakes. And we'll get started at the Chandler Arizonan this afternoon with an article by Ken Sane, Arizonan Managing Editor. Downtown Chandler Cinema Gives Way to Court Games. After two failed attempts, the concept of having a downtown movie theater appears to be dead. This month, Padland announced they are converting the Look Dine-In Cinema into their first U.S. location for Paddle, a relatively young sport. That's P-A-D-E-L. Padland will keep the brewery that was part of the two cinemas that sat at the location. Flick's Brewhouse was the first theater at the site, opening in December of 2018. When it was first unveiled in 2017, city officials hailed the announcement, noting that it would play an important role as part of the $25 million Overstreet multi-use development, which they termed a destination driver. What we've heard loud and clear is that businesses and residents really wanted a downtown theater, one official said. It's been a fun process. But Flicks closed in 2020 after struggling to survive during the pandemic, which had forced movie houses across the state to close for weeks. Look Dine-In Cinema opened in 2021, but it too closed after the building's owner locked out the movie house owners for failure to pay their bills in January of this year. Both cinemas offered food and beverages while watching first-run movies, and Look was also home to the Chandler International Film Festival the last 4 years. Now the site will be home to a relatively new sport in America, but a popular one abroad. Paddle resembles double tennis, but it is played on a slightly smaller court with walls on all sides, so it includes some elements of squash in gameplay. Instead of using a tennis racket, paddle players use a paddle with holes in it. It's a team sport, so every game is a doubles match. The ball must land on the court first, but can bounce off the walls and remain in play after that. Players can even use their own wall to bounce a return back to the other team. A Mexican businessman invented the game in 1969, but while it has grown internationally, it struggled to find its footing in the U.S. In 2023, there were an estimated 26 paddle venues, with 180 courts in the states. Spain had 15,000 courts at that time. The United States Paddle Association estimates that by 2030, there will be more than 30,000 paddle courts in this country. It is growing in the east of the country, in New York and Miami, said Daniel Maldonado, who is bringing Paddleland to Chandler. This is exploding. Maldonado and his partners have opened four similar facilities, all outside the U.S. The closest to the valley is in Sonora, Mexico. In addition to having four paddle courts, Paddleland will also have five pickleball courts. Two of those will be tournament courts with seating for spectators. We're having a full-on restaurant bar area with a terrace and a mezzanine, which is going to be a lounge for all the people watching the games or having a beer or having something to eat. Maldonado said their facilities outside the U.S., which have a different name, are doing very well, and he expects Americans will embrace the sport once they're introduced to it. We're trying to be pioneers on this in Arizona, he said, trying to bring it to people to try it. I think they're going to love it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Maldonado said that most of the facility will look similar to how it did when Look was operating. They will update the restaurant and bar areas. Most of the work that needs to be done before opening is installing the courts where the theaters once stood. We're full throttle, he said, anticipating it will open in late November. And next we stick with the Chandler Arizonan and with Ken Sane, Arizonan Managing Editor. New rules imposed to keep Arizona high school sports safe. The Arizona Interscholastic Association is taking steps to improve safety for the state's high school athletes. Starting this year, all fall sports athletes must complete, by the end of September, an anti-hazing course and another on opioid and concussion education. Athletes in winter and spring sports must complete those courses before they can try out for a team. It's important to be proactive with this type of training so students are aware of the dangers of hazing and the outcomes that may go with it, said AIA Executive Director Dr. Jim Dean. This will be another step to assist our coaches, school administrators, and communities related to the important aspects of hazing and hazing prevention. The other change to improve safety for high school athletes requires all credentialed media to pass a fingerprint background check by the Arizona Department of Public Safety. Seth Polanski, the AIA's Director of Media Services, said there was no single incident that led to these changes in AIA policies. It was a culmination of years of claims being filed in the state legislature panting an anti-hazing state statute that the Arizona Risk Retention Trust decided to develop a course to at least reduce, if not to eliminate, hazing incidents in schools that are leading to many issues, injuries, transfers, and lawsuits. One of Arizona's most notorious hazing incidents took place in Chandler. In 2017, six Hamilton High School football players were arrested for hazing incidents that included sexual assault and aggravated assault. The hazing took place between 2015 and 2017 on school grounds. In 2020, one former student was sentenced to 6 months probation. Several CUSD employees were censured by the State Board of Education because of their roles in the scandal. There have been other cases. The most recent was at Liberty High School in Peoria, where videos of wrestlers show inappropriate conduct. Eight football players were dismissed from the Paradise Valley High School football team in 2016 over incidents that happened during an out-of-state football camp. Five Empire High School junior varsity football players in Tucson were suspended in 2014 over hazing allegations. Three Douglas High School football players were accused of forcing another student into a car and driving him to the desert where they planned to abandon him. They said it was a school tradition. In 2000, eight Winslow players were indicted on charges from kidnapping to rape. Opioids are painkillers used by some athletes to help them play when injured. The number of deaths due to opioid overdoses has fallen, but it's still high. The National Institute on Drug Abuse said opioids killed more than 79,000 in the U.S. in 2023. There has also been a case where a credentialed member of the media acted inappropriately with high school athletes. Two brothers who were freelance media were accused of sending sexually suggestive and uncomfortable messages to high school athletes in Scottsdale, Phoenix, Gilbert, and Mesa. One girls' basketball player claimed they had asked for photos of herself in a bra. A volleyball player was told she was cute and asked if she had a boyfriend. A baseball player was encouraged to streak or do naked push-ups. The brothers' credentials were revoked. And our final story for Chandler comes again from the Chandler Arizonan, and the story is by Samantha Rea, Arizonan staff writer. Three community colleges join reform program. Three Maricopa community colleges will reform their programs to guide more community college students into paths that lead directly to good jobs or bachelor's degrees. Chandler Gilbert, Gateway, and Paradise Valley Community Colleges are three of the 55 institutions across the nation chosen to join the Unlocking Opportunity Network by the Aspen Institute College Excellence Program. Unlocking Opportunity is a three-year initiative that engages community colleges to develop and enact reforms focused on increasing the number of students entering and completing high-value programs. The ultimate goal of Unlocking Opportunity is to ensure that more students complete programs that lead directly to well-paying jobs or completion of a bachelor's degree. The initiative was developed in partnership by the Aspen Institute College Excellence Program and the Community College Research Center. It began in 2023 with 10 colleges in the pilot network. The colleges applied for the second cohort and explained why they would be a good fit for the network. Then their leadership was interviewed by Aspen, and eventually they were selected. Over the 3 years, college leaders will participate in virtual and in-person sessions aimed at aligning college programs with regional workforce needs and bachelor's degree pathways. Leaders from Chandler Gilbert, Gateway, Paradise Valley, and the 52 other community colleges will have the opportunity to engage with representatives from Aspen and the pilot colleges. Network colleges will also use lessons from the 10 pilot institutions' successful reforms to set goals to grow enrollment in high-value programs. The lessons will help guide this second cohort through the first cohort's experience of strategies that worked, didn't work, and lessons learned. Our team is interested in learning all of that because there's always the challenge where we're all different in our own way, but we're all trying to focus on student success. Chandler Gilbert Community College President Dr. C.J. Worster said, "So leveraging some best practices, but then seeing how those can apply to our specific college, our specific student need, our community need, and our industry need is something that our team has a significant interest in. In the first year, schools will focus on planning. This fall, colleges will do a deep dive into data on some of the programs and transfer pathways they offer. In the spring, they'll start to establish their goals within unlocking opportunity. Actions will start being taken towards each college's identified goals after the first year. Success will be measured through metrics such as retention and student persistence, student transfer rates, and time to completion. Chandler Gilbert Community College already has a few areas in mind that it would like to highlight," Worster said. First, he said they'd like to see dual enrollment pathways strengthened so that high school students can earn college credits with a clear career pathway in mind. Second, Chandler Gilbert will be taking a look at their advising strategies, focusing on advising excellence and how they approach front-end support as students enter programs. Third, they'll be looking for areas to strengthen program pathways to upward mobility. Chandler Gilbert will be analyzing its workforce development-related programs and university transfer pathways to find opportunities for advancement. What reform actually looks like will vary by college because programs vary by college. At Chandler Gilbert, for example, Worster said there may be a way to build in stackable credentials within some programs, adding value throughout the pathway. The 10 Unlocking Opportunity pilot institutions are currently on track to collectively move over 20,000 students into high-value programs. The pilot colleges will continue to have their progress supported and tracked by Aspen for 3 years, along with the 55 colleges chosen for the expanded network. "Every single day I'm coming to work and I have an opportunity to have an impact," Worster said. "So with this work, to be able to be focused for the next 3 years through unlocking opportunity and looking for ways to continue to build on the good things that we do already and make them even better, I just have an incredible amount of passion for that and for the community, really, to be able to serve the needs." Dr. Amy Diaz, president of Gateway Community College, noted that her campus works to open doors to opportunity for every student. "Being part of the Unlocking Opportunity Network allows us to add resources in powerful new ways, ensuring our students not only complete their programs, but also move into meaningful careers that change the trajectory of their lives and strengthen our community," Diaz said. Dr. Jana Schwartz, president of Paradise Valley Community College, said the partnership with Aspen gives us a powerful framework to strengthen how we guide students from the classroom to careers and transfer opportunities. "Together, we are aligning programs with the needs of Arizona's workforce and universities so that our students gain not only credentials, but the confidence and preparation to thrive in the next stage of their journey," Schwartz said. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your reader, J.W. Nicholas, and we're looking at news from the past week from Chandler, Gilbert, and Sun Lakes. As a quick reminder, if you missed any part of this program or others you may enjoy on Sun Sounds, you can access all of them anytime on demand on our website at www.sunsounds.org. Find them under broadcast info and audio. And now we'll move along to our next story. This is from the Sun Lake Splash by David Zapotka. Word of the month, corrival. Longtime friend, wordsmith, and fellow verbivore, Bill Lewis, recently sent me a summary of the Missouri State Games table tennis results, where he presides as the Grand Master Tournament Director. He writes, in a Johnny Quest race for first place in the under 2100 division, there were 12 hardy corrivals. Corrival, noun. 1. Rival, a fellow competitor, or one who was with another in pursuit of the same object or goal. Origin and etymology. The word corrival stems from the combination of the prefix co, meaning together, and the Latin root rivalis. Rivalis referred originally to someone sharing the same stream from rivus, meaning stream, and later generalized to anyone in competition, especially property-wise. Late Middle English from Latin rivalis, one who uses the same stream, with the prefix co, indicating joint rivalry. Corrival is a somewhat archaic term. It can still be used effectively in literature and formal speech to denote a person who is an active rival in pursuit of an objective, bringing an undertone of historical rivalry to the context. The term corrival offers historical richness, hinting at conflicts over shared resources such as streams, an issue that was particularly relevant in agrarian societies. Though not frequently used in modern dialogue, corrival can invoke a nostalgia or literary flavor when employed in writing. First known use. Earliest evidence for corrival is from 1578 in the writing of John Lyly, writer and playwright. Corrival used in a sentence. During their pursuit for dominance in the world of medieval trade, the Venetian and Genoese merchants were natural corrivals, each striving to gain the upper hand in the lucrative spice market of the East. Despite their ostensibly friendly collaborations, TechCorp and BioMerge were seen as corrivals in the race to develop the next revolutionary AI solution. Each company's innovation prompted the other to strive harder, fueling a competitive yet productive atmosphere. Though not containing the term explicitly, it provides valuable insights about rivalry and competition that can be understood through the lens of a corrival. The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexandre Dumas features characters who would be described as corrivals in contexts of vengeance and justice. Certainly in our day, it is the most general and at the same time the most expensive, and although several rivals contend with Sir Walter Raleigh for the praise of having introduced tobacco into England, yet the bright honor of having taught his countrymen to imitate the Indians, in this particular, he wears without corrival. In this permutation, the amount of meat is about that of a cull of one lobster claw, as opposed to a full pound and a quarter's worth of meat, but it sells for two-thirds the price of its closest corrival at Pearl, so the portion seems to make fair fiscal sense. Who are the corrivals in your life, and where do you meet up with them? Please submit your experiences, or any word you may like to share, along with your insights and comments, to dzapotka@wbhsi.net. And next we move along into Gilbert with an article from the Gilbert Sun News, this by Aparna Sekhar, GSN staff writer. Gilbert Council considering an e-bike ordinance. A boom in the use of electric bikes and incidents involving them are prompting Gilbert police to call for more stringent local control beyond public education efforts. At a town council study session last week, Assistant Police Chief Mike Anstead said the surge to e-bikes popularity in Gilbert is part of a national trend among teens and even preteens. They're a popular alternative mode of transportation, and we have a concern or vested interest in these bikes of all kinds in terms of enforcing the laws and regulations, he said, and making sure that people are safe as they operate on our roadways and sidewalks. Saying the issue cannot be resolved overnight, he recommended a multifaceted approach involving engineering, education, and enforcement working in tandem. He called attention to the results of a survey used for the 2022 Transportation Master Plan, stating 70% of respondents wanted more separation between bikes and conventional motor vehicles on Gilbert Roads. As a part of public education campaign, police launched the Know Your Ride campaign this month, Engstead said. As a parent, reading state law can be kind of cumbersome. You read through it and you kind of think you know what it's talking about in terms of bikes and e-bikes. But if I was to take all the different variations of e-bikes and bring them in here right now, we would all have a really hard time telling one device from the other. And I would have a hard time, and this is what I do for a living. Engstead explained there are three classes of e-bikes, all of which can be pedaled. Class 1 e-bikes can reach a speed of 20 miles per hour, but the rider must be pedaling while hitting the throttle to increase the speed. Class 2 e-bikes can also go up to a speed of 20 miles, but the rider doesn't have to pedal or start the electric motor. You can sit there and just keep the pedals level and just use the motor the entire time, Engstead said. Class 3 e-bikes are similar to the Class 1 bikes. The rider has to pedal to start the motor, but these bikes can hit up to 28 miles per hour. People must be at least 16 years old to own and operate one under state law. Electric motorcycles fall under a completely different part of the law, Engstead noted, since they are considered a motor vehicle. Legally, riders of these motorcycles must be at least 16 and wear a helmet if they are under 18. Some electric motorcycles can be modified to go up to 70 miles per hour or higher, Engstead said. But while these motorcycles must be registered, licensed, and insured to even be on the road, overseas ones cannot even be registered in the country. The truth of the matter is, the bike that's featured here that you see a lot on our sidewalks, they can't even be registered. They're not Department of Transportation compliant, Engstead said. They're often made exclusively overseas, and so it's tempting for parents to buy them because they're cheap and they're kind of like an e-bike, but they're for the most part completely illegal to operate. Engstead also thanked Councilwoman Young Kaprowski for pitching in to educate citizens about bike safety and bike helmet awareness and handing out bike helmets to many kids in Gilbert. In terms of the town engineering efforts to increase bike safety in Gilbert, Engstead said town bike lanes have been expanded from 5.5 feet wide to 6 feet. He also noted 82% of respondents to the Green Bike Lane Program survey wanted more green lanes, and the town currently is in the process of installing more. Many of the town's capital improvement projects are also focused on safer trails, canal paths, road crossings, and providing safer school routes to kids, he said. Gilbert has invested about $215 million on projects to enhance safety for cyclists and pedestrians. Even with these measures, there have been bike collisions in Gilbert, though the town has seen a reduction in them from 65 in 2023 to 48 last year. But he said more juvenile bike operators were involved in crashes last year. I think this is attributed to there's more kids out there on bikes, which we all thought would be a good thing. Get them off the computers, get them off the Xbox, get them outside. But the proliferation of these e-bikes has changed things. In 2023, there were 2 adult bike fatalities, and in 2024, 5 with serious injuries to juveniles. Among victims, only 23% were wearing helmets. For major vehicle-related bike collisions in 2024, only 1 in 6 riders in Gilbert were wearing a helmet, and that's adult and juvenile, Engstead said. Engstead said Gilbert, in 2001, had an ordinance requiring bicycle helmets for a very short time before it was repealed. Today, underage bike riders in Gilbert can be cited for a civil traffic violation with a fine not exceeding $100 if they ride without a helmet. He noted that Scottsdale, Mesa, and Chandler have similar laws, with riders under 18 required to wear a helmet when on a motorized skateboard or e-bike. Chandler also included more variations of e-bikes under its law, Tempe, on the other hand, requires all underage riders, bicycle or e-bikes, to wear a helmet. Engstead also pointed out that in July, Scottsdale put into effect an ordinance that forbids anyone under 16 from riding Class 3 e-bikes on city property. The law also applies to electric motorcycles capable of reaching a speed of at least 21 miles per hour. Engstead provided the council with four different options for ordinances in Gilbert. Keep the status quo. Require all riders, regardless of age, to wear a helmet on any form of bike used on public property. Require riders under 18 to wear helmets on any form of bicycle or e-bikes. Require riders under the age of 18 to wear helmets on all classes of e-bikes. Most of the council concurred that was fast becoming a serious issue, though some were concerned about how police enforce an ordinance. Our goal, if council was inclined to pass an ordinance, would be to start off with a pretty heavy education component, trying to get the word out that we have a new ordinance, and then we would carry that forward out in the field, Engstead said. But he noted, eventually we have to actually enforce it. What I've seen when we look at some of the ordinances here in the Valley, most of them are set up for civil traffic fines for these violations, so you get a ticket and it's a fine. Vice Mayor Bobby Buckley wanted to know what Gilbert parents and guardians said about having a bike ordinance in town, and Engstead said that information was not part of the 2022 survey. Councilman Chuck Bongiovanni, an avid bicyclist himself, said that he had recently seen social media videos of kids on such e-bikes that were recorded by police drones. Engstead said that drones are part of Gilbert's first responder efforts to catch kids riding e-bikes recklessly. If we're talking safety, these numbers are much higher than I would have anticipated, said Councilman Jim Torgerson. Personally, I've witnessed a group of 10 to 12 riding wheelies going down northbound on Higley in front of Morrison Ranch, doing like 40 miles an hour with cars behind them, said Councilman Kenny Buckland. Kaprowski said that she would support an ordinance requiring helmets and urge police to look into a speed limit enforcement for e-bikes while partnering with school districts for bike safety education in schools. Mayor Scott Anderson stated that he supported Kaprowski's suggestions. I fully believe in more parenting and less government, unless the kids don't listen and the parents don't parent, Bongiovanni added. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Chandler, Gilbert, and Sun Lakes. A quick reminder, you can always find us on any of your connected devices, streaming via our Sun Sounds of Arizona mobile app, available for Apple and Android phones and tablets. Once again, I'm your volunteer reader, J.W. Nicholas. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.